How can a bunch of bicycles help us end human trafficking? You don't want to miss this one right here, the lifestyle.org podcast. All right, today I'm joined with Brad Ortenzi. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing well.
It's so great to see you. I am really interested to hear how bicycles can help us end human trafficking, but this is something you're really passionate about. Tell me about what you're doing to try to help us lower the amount of people who are humanly trafficked.
Yes. So, well, we're entering, my organization, Zoe International, is entering the Race Across America. And through that, the Race Across America gives us the platform to raise awareness of human trafficking and also raise funds for our nonprofit. It's kind of the way that the Race Across America is set up. It's a race that starts in California, ends in Maryland, but it's really not just an ultra cycling event. It's made for people to come in and do some altruistic work within the race.
That's so cool. Yeah, you guys are June 17. This is the year 2023. June 17 is when you start, and you guys call it a 3,000 mile sprint. I don't know if I could sprint for 3,000 miles.
Yeah. So the way this works is the Race Across America, you can enter it as a one-person team, a solo person doing the whole race, 3,000 miles, or you can enter a relay team. And the relay teams are made up of either 2, 4, or 8-man teams. And we choose to put an 8-man team in. So what that means is that we have to have one cyclist on the road at one time, and we can interchange them however much we want to. But the way we do it is we want to go as fast as we can and try and win this thing. So each rider is on the road for about 15 minutes at a time. So we're constantly changing the riders out. So really those 15 minutes, they're sprinting for 15 minutes.
Yeah. So it's really an all out sprint. That's cool. I might be able to do that for a couple of legs and then I'd give out. You're starting in Oceanside, California. You're ending in Annapolis, Maryland. That is amazing. What states are you guys going through?
I don't remember all the states, but I know there's 12 states. We go up, start in Oceanside, go up over through the California desert, go up over the Rockies, down into the Midwest. Kansas is in there as well. And then we keep going west until we hit the Appalachians. We come up into, I believe, Ohio, and then dip down into Maryland to get to Annapolis.
Yeah, and people who are really curious, you've got your map right there on your website. Your website, just so people who want to already start connecting while they're listening to this podcast, what's the best address for them to go to?
So you can go to RAM's website. So RAM, again, RAM is it's their own nonprofit. They do this race every year. They've been doing it for, I think this is going to be their 41st or 42nd year. They've been doing the Race Across America. I remember watching the Race Across America as a kid on Wide World of Sports back in the day. So it's been around. A while. So that's you just Google Race Across America. That website will come up, and that has the route, which is pretty much the same route every year. My organization, Zoe International, if you just look gozoe.org, has all information on not only what we do, but then there's links to our own RAM, Zoe RAM page, our team that's entered into the Race Across America.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk more about the Zoe International website, because I went on there yesterday and was just blown away by what you guys are doing, how you're doing it, who's doing it. And I'm going to come back to that here in a little bit. But I want you to talk to me about really the heart of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. You're not just riding a bike because you want to ride a bike, and because you get to do it with a bunch of cool guys. You're doing this for a very big cause. How is this in some ways going to help the human trafficking situation, the problem that we have now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first off, I think when you ask most people what human trafficking is, their concept of it is usually not accurate if they get it from the way Hollywood perceives it. And generally speaking, it just is not the way that it looks. So one of the things that we're doing with the Race Across America and entertainment to Race Across America is it gives us a platform to tell people what and teach people what human trafficking really is. And it gives exposure to our organization, which gives us then platforms to really teach and show people what human trafficking really is.
Yeah,
it's hard to ask people to get involved in the fight against human trafficking if they have an inaccurate concept of what it really looks like day to day. So that's part of this whole process for us and the Race Across America, is it gives us a platform, a voice, so to speak. If we just went online and said, hey, we want to tell people about human trafficking, some people listen. But if we do something crazy, like race for 3,000 miles across the country in a race that actually goes 24/7 and doesn't stop until you reach the finish line, now we've just grabbed people's attention and we have the opportunity to teach what about human trafficking is and how people can get involved.
Yeah, well, that's huge. The statistics are really high.
They're staggering.
From what I understand from your materials, in 2016, there were 403,000 people who were victims of human trafficking just in the U.S.
That's correct.
That's amazing. What other things would surprise people, the statistics that would surprise our viewers at that the level or the amount of humans that are being trafficked right now?
Well, the U.S. State Department, their estimation of worldwide people that are enslaved in human trafficking is 40 million. I mean, and who can really wrap their head around 40 million and what that looks like?
Yeah.
A large percentage or a certain percentage of that is the has to do with child marriage of countries that are okay with marrying children in their early teens. So that there's some of those are kind of lumped into the human trafficking statistic as well. But one of the things that I think really surprises people, and we work in task forces all over the world, actually, but specifically even here in the United States, is that it's happening in their backyard. And if people are from big cities, they might get it. But if people are in suburban or rural areas, they generally think it's not happening around here. And that's just usually not true.
It's not. Even where I'm living in Southern California, Orange County and San Bernardino seem to be in a competition for who has the most kids that are being trafficked. It's right here in our backyard.
Yep, that's alarming. Yep, for sure.
Now, you're passionate about this partly because your background, your employment background, used to work with this. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so this whole thing started for me. I was a detective here in Pennsylvania and doing a regular caseload, and I got involved in what was called ICAC, Internet Crimes Against Children, which I was trained on a federal task force to go online and act as a pedophile sometimes, interacting with other pedophiles, and specifically where it came to the online training of child pornography, and we would work cases that way. Or there would be times where a parent would come to us and say that their child is being groomed online, and we would do an account takeover where I would become that child, and the guy would start, you know, interacting with me, and we'd set up a case and stings that way. Wow. So I was a little bit later in my career when I started this. I was probably on the job maybe 15 years and pretty callous to everything that I've already seen. But when I started getting involved in that type of work, there was a part of my heart that sort of broke of like, wow, this is a really serious problem. So I sort of switched to just working online child sexual cases. And then coming to the end of my career, I was looking for a retirement job. Knew that I still had some fight left in me, and found Zoe International, which they were sort of in this arena, the same kind of fight of saving children from child trafficking. And a lot of what the trafficking now is online. So there was just a general agreement there of, you know, I have some skills that might help, and I had a passion. So contacted Zoe, and the rest is history. Went retired, and my first 5 years with Zoe were in Thailand. I was a director of child rescue there, monitoring the investigations going on in Thailand.
Well, so you guys are not only working on the human trafficking issue in the U.S., but you're in multiple countries. Talk to me about which countries you're currently working in.
Yeah, so we are in Thailand. Thailand's our biggest operation. We have approximately 100 Thai nationals working with us in Thailand. We have a home for trafficked children in Thailand. Right now, I think our home has, about 50 to 60 rescued children that we serve there. So we not only help to rescue them with working with police and aiding those investigations, but we also have a complete restorative campus there for them. So that's our biggest operation in Thailand. We rescue, I think, generally speaking, on an average between 20 and 30 children a year in Thailand. Then we're in Mexico, Japan, Australia, and then here in the United States. Here in the United States, our biggest operations are in Los Angeles. We also have another home for trafficked children in Los Angeles. And we also have an advocate program where we do casework and advocate work for about 100 girls that have been already pulled from Los Angeles.
Wow. So these kids that are being trafficked, is it mostly girls, mostly boys?
It's mostly girls. And there are some boys that have been trafficked, but generally speaking, and it depends on the location. For a while there in Thailand, we were rescuing as many boys as we did girls. There was a high percentage of boy trafficking in Thailand. So it's really interesting when you try and look at what that percentage really is, because a lot of the investigations focus on girls, so to speak. So there could be boys that are being trafficked that really don't fit into the investigation lens. So it's kind of hard. And maybe those percentages are skewed boys to girls.
Wow. So what do you think, because you've done this a while, what do you think is the common misconceptions that people have of human trafficking?
Yeah, so this gets a little complicated, but I think common misconceptions are that people think if someone's being trafficked and it's a horrendous life, that they're just going to walk away from it. And that's the biggest one right there. I think I've been working in investigations between police work and here for over 30 years now. So I've never come across something called the trauma bond before. And that's what really holds these people into trafficking. And it really confuses because generally speaking, people look at the situation and think, well, they're not being chained to a bed. They're not locked in a hotel room. Why don't they just
walk away? Yeah.
They just don't. There's this really nasty bond that forms with their trafficker, almost like Stockholm syndrome or that trauma bond where they're generally speaking, it's called a Romeo pimp, where an older guy is going to come in and he's going to meet all the vulnerability needs of this child. And the child's going to feel indebted to him and him or her, but usually to him. And that's the misconception of what it really looks like. But that's, without going into great detail for a whole hour class, that's generally the biggest misconception.
Yeah, I was blown away here in San Bernardino. Of course, I've been working with people who are trying to eradicate the human trafficking organizations here. And one of the ladies who has a home trying to help transition these precious kids, she said that in the mall that these traffickers just blatantly will come up to the kids. The parents would be in the mall too, not far from them. And they come up and right there in person will offer them things. And the things that they offer them are not like huge stacks of cash or cars or anything. They offer them name brand little bags of chips and fingernail polish. And these girls are basically bought by these things that they cannot afford. There's a poverty level that they've never experienced name brand chips and this beautiful nail polish and things that inexpensive are enough for these predators to be able to give these kids something they've never had before.
Right. And I think the key word there is vulnerability. These guys prey on vulnerability and they're masters at it. Unfortunately, the weird concept, and because we're global, I see this and this sort of fascinates me. There's no chat room for all these guys to get together and discuss how they do what they do.
Yeah.
But the same grooming techniques and the same schemes are used in every country that we work in. That's kind of amazing to me. It's almost like that dark side of human nature is the same no matter wherever you go. But the main thing that they're attacking is vulnerability. they begin to meet the needs, and they study, they're experts, and they don't just look at a person and say, I'm going to traffic that person. They'll put themselves where these children are, and they'll just study and watch them and begin to ask questions. And they find the vulnerability, and then they just start meeting those vulnerability needs and create a bond with that child. And it's a systematic approach to how they win them over.
That's manipulation on the highest form,
for sure,
and to the lowest level. Wow, that's huge. So I can understand why you're passionate, especially with your job before and now having an opportunity to work with Zoe International with this Race Across America. Talk to me about the team that you have this year. I understand there's 8 riders that are going,
yes,
with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's eight riders. You know, we first started doing this, we were just very naive to think, you know, the logistics of this race are just crazy. So we just threw a bunch of guys together and we started this Race Across America. And we ended up doing okay, but we really realized really early on how naive we were. So this is the third time we're doing it. So we're a little more strategic of who we ask to come on the team, specifically not just the riders, but this takes almost 20 crew members to get this, to get all those 8 riders across. So there's almost, you know, there's a whole bunch of us going across the country. So all that to say, so the riders come from all over the place. And after the first couple of years we did this, we had cyclists that I knew were coming out of the woodwork of, hey, I want to be a part of this. Can I race next time? So we have a whole list of cyclists to pick from. And the 8 we pick from are come from all different walks of life, basically. You know, the main thing that we do look for is, do they have a connection to Zoe, and do they connect with what we're doing? So we don't just need a fast cyclist. We need someone that really wants to carry, you know, our brand, but also be passionate about what Zoe is doing as well. And they usually need to be pretty well connected as far as business and friends, because we ask them to try and raise 20 grand themselves. So it's a pretty high number. Yeah, 20 grand each. So it's a high number. So, you know, a lot of times if they have business contacts, we bring businesses on, and that gives us another opportunity to share what we're doing to the businesses and so forth. So, you know, we have, this year we have some interesting people. We have, well, I guess they're always interesting, but we have a detective that works human trafficking on one of the task forces that I work with. So he's not only a detective locally, but he also is what's called a task force officer with Department of Homeland Security. So Department of Homeland Security has kind of deputized him to do human trafficking cases. So he's an interesting, really been an interesting component this year. He's an avid cyclist, so he just fit perfectly. We have a bunch of business owners, bankers, guys that own their own plumbing and heating business. So it's a kind of a hodgepodge of guys. We have a scientist on board. So yeah, just a whole bunch of different people. And then the crew is kind of the same thing, different people from different walks of life, but all coming together for one cause.
I think that's huge, because what you're showing all of us here is, it doesn't matter what your occupation is. All of us have the same vocation, which is, how are we making the world a better place? How are we using our time, our talents, even our faith background, our understanding of why we're here, what we're called to do with the time and the resources that we have to truly help people in need? And so it's truly a shining example. Wow, 20 grand a person. So let me ask you this. Is there a way that people watching this who are passionate about helping address the human trafficking issue, is there a way that they can go online and donate to what you guys are doing?
Yes. So first off, we always direct people to our Zoe's website, which is gozoe.org. And within there, you'll see the Zoe Ram webpage. We have a landing page with the webpage and within our main webpage. And within that, all the cyclist donation pages are there. So you can donate to a cyclist, you can donate to a crew member, or you can just give generally to the Zoe Ram fund, which everything goes into our, dumps into our general fund that helps Zoe fight the human trafficking in 5 countries.
That's huge. So where, big umbrella, because I know this gets complex, but if someone were to give money to Zoe International, how would that basically relate to freeing people?
Right. So Zoe is a nonprofit. So we occasionally get grants, but generally speaking, all the money that funds what we do in the five countries comes from donations of people, either families, churches, businesses. So yeah, that's how we're kind of funded. Like I said, every once in a while, we'll shoot for a government grant. Those are very hard to get at times. So generally that's how we operate. Every single year, we do some type of general fundraisers. And this happens to be one of our fundraisers.
This is good. And you only do this race like every other year, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. I would go completely nuts if we did it every year. It's huge. It's a huge project. Yeah.
And it takes you 2 years to recover after sprinting across America.
Sure.
Now you guys are going at June 17 to 23 of the year 2023. So it's coming up like real quick. If people were to be along the route on the map, is there on the website, does it give an approximate time do you have people cheering you on along the route, or are you just like going so fast?
Great question. We're pretty much going so fast. So generally we're going to be averaging over 22 miles an hour. So that's the speed of which we're traveling. So, we have had people say, we want to come to the route and watch you. It's kind of hard to time a little bit.
Yeah.
If you go to the RAM website, the Race Across America website, there's a map of the race, and then you'll have the dots. They call it dot watching. Every team is located on the map, and we carry satellite. We have GPSs on our follow vehicle, so you can tell where every team is. So you can see where they're going, but it's still challenging to actually come to the route and watch us. But though we do have people, but they're always surprised that when they see us, we're going by 20 miles an hour. We wave to them.
Bye, and bye.
That's as far as it goes. So what we've done this year, what we're implementing this year, is a live stream component to what we're doing. So we're going to have live stream set up in the follow car so people can get the sense of what's going on with the race. They can actually see the transitions taking place. They can see the riders. And we're going to have a media team with us that's going to kind of have information or pumping things to the live stream so they can get a sense of how Zoe's experience in the race.
That's awesome. That's good. Is there like a time that you're trying to beat this year? Do you kind of challenge yourself to beat your best time, or are you trying to be the first team that actually makes it across?
We're trying to be the first team that makes it across. We accomplished that in 2021. We did place first in the 8-man relay, and not only the 8-man relay, but we were the first to actually cross the finish line of all the teams and all the solo teams. The solo riders, they start about 3 or 4 days before us.
Yeah. You got to give them a head start.
We got to give them a head start. Yeah. And total respect to those people. I mean, it's hard enough doing this as a relay race. Yeah. But those are the true athletes that just travel 3,000 miles, anywhere between 9 and 12 days, usually, across the country. Those people are just amazing. So yeah. So the time we're trying to hit is we want to finish under 6 days this year. We've gotten close to 6 days before. But if all goes well, and the operative word there is if, because the logistics of this thing are crazy. There's always flat tires. There's always sandstorms. There's always illnesses, everything. So we're trying to get to 6 days. So if we increase our average about half a mile an hour, we have a shot at making it under 6 days.
Wow. So yeah, you have to deal with the fact of injury as well. If someone gets hurt, has anyone ever had to drop out and the rest of the team just picks up that
we level? Haven't had any dropouts yet. We've had illnesses where guys, you know, took it easy for a little bit. But you know, we have 8 riders, and once the race starts, we can't substitute anybody. So if something happens, we're down to 7 riders or 6 riders. So we've had a couple crashes, which that's sort of a normal thing to do in a bike race. It just kind of happens. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, if we have sandstorms or we have rain, you know, we're still out there and it gets slippery at times. So we've had a bunch of mishaps, but nothing that has really helped us up long. But we're always looking out for that too.
That's great. Well, we're going to put the Zoe International website on the description. So if those of you watching are wanting to know, I want to know more about this, more about the guys that are racing, see the route and how you can help support their fight against human trafficking, look in the description below because we have the website there. But Brett, I want to ask you before we go, what's something that you just wish that the common person on the street understood about this fight against human trafficking? What do you wish that they knew?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, this all starts with vulnerability. And unfortunately, many times the victims of human trafficking are those that are sort of left in the dust and the people kind of forgot about. And that's a shame. And that's even, I think that even strengthens my resolve even more of this happens with vulnerability children that generally speaking, maybe didn't have a great start in their life. And someone came in and so, you know, another thing that how this kind of comes about for me is we always say in our teachings that an empowered child is very hard to traffic. Hmm. And I think that's where all responsibility comes from. You know, if we see gaps and we see children that are struggling out there, I think it's all of our responsibility to do something about that. So, I think that's what I really want people to know, that these guys attack vulnerability. So if we see vulnerability, especially with kids, then it's and they're not being taken care of the way they should, then it's all our responsibility to step up and do something about that. So without vulnerability, we wouldn't have trafficking. So that's something that's overlooked a bit.
I think that's huge, Brad, because it shows all of us have a responsibility. It's not just about, you know, going and taking the children away from the trafficker. It's there's so much preventative stuff that we can do in helping these precious souls. They have a great life coming up. They have many things that they're meant to do with their lifetime, and yet they can be derailed just simply because at this vulnerable time in their life, someone takes advantage of that vulnerability. We can easily, with the young people around us who, you know, we can see they're at risk because they're emotionally needy, we truly can step in and help them and encourage them and show them that they do have value, and help them to be empowered, like what you say. I think that's so huge.
For sure. Yep, for sure. And again, I truly believe, I concur, it's our response, everyone's responsibility. So, you know, if there's gaps there, we can easily fill those gaps and befriend children, become involved in our community. You know, you can attack the vulnerability in so many different ways. So there's things we can do out there. So, you know, on top of that, there is things you can do to try and fight child trafficking, of educate yourselves and become involved and support those that are on the front line. But it really starts with that prevention part of just caring for everybody that's around in your sphere. That's where it begins.
Yeah, it's one of the best things we can do. Well, thank you, Brad, for coming and joining us here on the lifestyle.org podcast. I hope all of you go to the Zoe International web link down below, support what they're doing. They're really changing the world. They're changing a lot of people's worlds, and giving them truly the future that they need to have, to where they can go out and be world changers as well. We also encourage you to click on that subscribe button so you get more content like this. Click the like button so more people see this. And we also encourage you to go to our website, lifestyle.org, for more podcast episodes, broadcast episodes, and blogs to help you live your best life possible. We'll see you next time.